Welcome back. This is Coast to Coast AM. Our guest tonight, Jay Widener, and we are on a Falconelli quest. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church, sitting in for George tonight on this Good Friday. Our guest tonight is Jay Widener. Jay, I got a couple of questions that have popped into Twitter, and one of them, it's interesting. I think we're all wondering the same thing. How does a 500-year-old person stop aging physically? How do you appear? And who decides how they appear? Jay?
Yes.
Did you hear the question?
No, I didn't.
Okay. How does a 500-year-old person stop aging physically? You know, how do they appear? What do they look like? And who decides how they appear?
Well, they decide how they appear. What basically I believe is going on is that the real truth of the matter is, and I have a lot of evidence to back this up in recent research, is that the body is not run by calories, as we're being told. It's actually being run by electricity. And the amount of electricity that's running through your body depends on how much resistance is in the system of your body, or how much there isn't any resistance. If there's very little resistance on the electricity in your body, which runs your nervous system and your brain and everything else, will run very efficiently and keep you young and going. But as you age, resistance is built up through the calcification of the pineal gland and also the calcification of the arteries and the nervous system, which also gains kind of a chalky calc-y kind of thing going. And I think that's what is going on here, is that we have to find a way to stop the addition of all these things into our body, which cause it to essentially turn to stone. As you get older, your body essentially turns to stone because of all the water and everything you're drinking has all these salts in it, which eventually build up on your arteries and cause heart attacks and brain aneurysms and coat your pineal gland. Now, the key to aging is your pineal gland. And this can be found in a very stunning book, which I think you can get on Amazon still, called The Melatonin Miracle. And in this book, they talk about, I believe it's a Princeton study from the 1970s, in which the pineal glands of young rats were removed and replaced with older rats' pineal glands. And then they took older rats' pineal glands and replaced theirs with younger rats' pineal glands. And the young rats who had been given the old pineal glands aged rapidly and were dead within days after the operation. The older rats had been given the young pineal glands, reversed their aging down to where they were about, you know, teenagers in rat years, I guess. And so this is a valid study that it was done and is known by everybody. No one's ever followed up on it that I know of, but I mean, the implications are staggering. And so what does this mean? Well, it means is that when you have a young, uncalcified pineal gland, you will reverse your aging. Now, going out and grabbing another human being's pineal gland and sticking it on yours head is kind of an unethical kind of thing to do. So
let me jump in. So what you're suggesting here is that alchemists have found a way to uncalcify the pineal gland.
That's exactly right.
And so, Jay, can you tell us how they do it, or do you know?
Well, there's many ways to do it, actually. The most simple way to do it is to drink distilled water. Maybe not 100% drink distilled water, but drink, you know, maybe 2 months of distilled water and then 2 months of regular water throughout the year. What distilled water does is it not only draws out the all the salts and the decalcifies not just the pineal gland, but it also decalcifies the arterial walls, the aorta of the heart, which is the number one cause of death on earth, is the calcification of the heart. So there's very simple ways, all that are available right now that you can decalcify your system, and I encourage people to look into that because it really truly does work. And people like Nikola Tesla drank distilled water, and many, many famous people, Leonardo da Vinci drank distilled water. So it's not something that, is an idiotic thing to do. It's something that very, very smart people who actually were all into alchemy were doing. And
Right.
there's other ways, but that is one of the most simple ways, is to drink distilled water. Interestingly enough, and this is the only time I'm going to mention him tonight, in Stanley Kubrick's movie, Dr. Strangelove, the General Ripper advises the viewers that they should only drink distilled
That's right. I forgot about that. Well, I'll let the audience know that Jay is actually 250 years old. But Jay, is there a connection? I'm not making light of that, by the way. You look great. Is there any connection between the original Bavarian Illuminati and Falconelli and the presentation of the book?
Oh, I would say the only connection would be is that there was a break at the time of the creation of the Bavarian Illuminati. My research has shown that that's about the same time that there was a break with when the ranks of the elite Freemasons, in which a group of the elite Freemasons who understood the secrets of alchemy realized that the insurgent group of Freemasons that would become the Illuminati were not good guys, were people that they did not want to give the secret of long life to. And so that forced them to go underground. And I believe those are the people that are depicted in the Harry Potter movies and that Eugene Cancellieri, Falconelli's student, experienced when he went into the mountains and discovered a castle full of people who were still practicing medieval ways. I believe that that is the group that is trying to escape from the Illuminati because the Illuminati wants the secret of long life and they know that they can't give it to them.
Didn't Cancellieri, he did a transmutation. Didn't he transform some lead into gold? And was that on that particular castle trip? Because there were actual witnesses to the transmutation.
No, he didn't do it, but he witnessed one. But actually, what happened was he did go to that castle, and he had a lab in the room that he was living in, and he practiced alchemy for the 2 or 3 weeks that he was in this odd place in the Pyrenees Mountains, and I think he failed, and I think that's why they sent him back to I think. But my other theory is, and I think this is a very interesting theory, is that when the book Mystery of the Cathedrals first came out in 1929, 26,
Yeah, 26.
it did not have the chapter on the Henday cross in it. But when it was reprinted in 1957, it did. So Cancellieri's trip happened in 1952 or 51, I can't remember. And I believe that the trip really was not about testing Cancellieri's alchemical abilities. I believe that the trip was actually to hand Cancellieri the chapter on the Cross of Henday and add it to the Mystery of the Cathedrals book and then reprint it, or he was ordered to reprint it and with the chapter. And I believe that that was done on purpose to alert everybody to this odd cross in what it had to say. And it was interesting because nobody was really alerted to it. I don't understand why, but when the book was reprinted in 57 and then translated and published in English in 1959, nobody in France or Germany or America or England ever looked at this odd little cross. I'm not saying that I'm some sort of genius. I just kind of find it odd. In fact, I don't believe it. I believe that many, many people looked at the cross and discovered its meaning and just kept quiet about it.
Well, and then Jacques Bergier in 1937 had his communication with Falconelli,
in
which Falconelli made the references to nuclear power, nuclear weapons, a small amount of metal that would, you know, destroy cities. And he had a couple of strange communications with Bergier. But then when you connect that to the deciphering that Falconelli did on the Great Cross, which we're going to do now, by the way, they were similar, but this was 1937. And that kind of nuclear knowledge about the atom and what was going on, about to happen in World War II, we're all telling of the future, and all of it is spelled out at the Great Cross of Hendaye.
That's right, and let's not forget that when Hitler came to visit Franco in 1940 in Hendaye, France, the first thing he did when the train pulled up to the station is he walked up the hill, and I've walked up that hill. He walked straight up the hill and visited the Cross of Hendaye. I mean, that should tell you a lot right there.
And now let's do this. Let's start at the top. Let's start at the with the upper cross, and work our way down to the base. Twitter's on fire, by the way. You can follow me on Twitter at J Church Radio. But there are pictures throughout Twitter right now of the Great Cross. Everybody's posting it, so you can go and check that out and follow exactly what Jay and I are about to talk about. Let's start with the upper cross and the three main symbols.
Are you talking about the very top of the cross?
Yep.
The Latin?
Yep.
Yeah, so there's an X, and then there's a Latin phrase on one side, and then there's the famous INRI, which is above Jesus on the cross, on the other side of this cross that lies at the top of this monument. And the Latin phrase on the west side of the cross is... basically is Latin for hail the cross, hail the Holy Cross. And the problem is that it's broken. The Latin is broken. So it would be like if it said United States on the cross, it would be like United and then the S for states, and then the word below it would be just Tates. Right? So it would be like a misspelling of the word, which seems unbelievable for anyone to have done if they were carving this thing into stone. You would not make a spelling error like that. And Falconelli points out that this could not possibly be, but there's a message in that error. And you must figure out what that message is, he says. And he says that it speaks about a land or a place where there's a refuge. And so I became extremely interested in the phrase, that the Latin phrase that's on that cross, and I wrote it down. I would carry the phrase around with me and try to figure out what it meant, because Falconelli had intrigued me so much. And then one day I was just waiting for someone, and I had the phrase out on a card in my car as I was waiting for someone. And I realized that the X in the top word actually could break the entire phrase into four words if I just used the X as the separator. And as it did, I realized that if I unscrambled the words, it said Inca Caves, Cusco, Peru. And I was like, what? You know, this is a place of refuge somewhere in the world. And here I'd completely, and the Cusco was spelled in the Spanish. And I was like completely blown away. And I was like, what? And then I in the same moment, just seconds later, I looked at it again, and I realized that there was a second phrase in there, and which said, look for Urkos, look for the caves of the cross of Urkos. And I thought, Urkos, what's Urkos? So when I got home, I looked up the word Urkos in my atlas, and there was a town 20 miles away from Cusco called Urkos. And of course, then that meant I had to go to Peru and look at the and try to find the cross of Urkos. And I did, and when I went there, the cross of Urkos, which really does exist and sits on the lake of Urkos in Urkos, Peru, it had been broken off and replaced with a newer cross. And I later found out that this was a vandalism incident that occurred sometime in the mid-60s. So Folcanelli's book came out with the new chapter in 1957, translated to English in 1959, telling you that this message, secret message on the cross, was to go to the town of Urkos and look at the cross there, and the cross in Urkos had been vandalized and broken 7, 8 years later. And so when I went there, I could not follow the trail any longer, unfortunately. So, there's a trail here that goes into South America and Peru. And by the way, there's many, many rumors that Folcanelli went to South America after he wrote the book, Mysteries of the Cathedrals, with Marconi, the inventor of the radio.
And his warning that was in Mystery of the Cathedrals was something like, a huge purifying fire that is going to consume all of the northern hemisphere.
Yeah,
and that's the breakdown of the Great Cross.
It is, and that's the dismaying news that I'm going to be bringing you here, is that the basic message of the Cross of Hendaye is that there's a periodic catastrophe that occurs that involves the sun. And Robert Schock, in his most recent book, he's a geologist from Boston University, he has shown through the geologic record that indeed the sun did emit amazing solar flares about 12,000 years ago. And if you match all of the iconography and the symbols on the Cross of Hendaye and back engineer it, which I did with Vincent Bridges, in our book Mysteries of the Lake of the Great Cross of Hendaye, you can see that we're getting close to the predicted time period right now, and here's the thing that's going on, Jimmy, and this is what really worries me, is I'm old enough to know that the sun used to be yellow and now it's not. It's white hot. And I have friends who have been in the construction industry for like 30, 35 years, doing roofs and stuff. And they tell me that when they're out there pounding, nails and stuff, and it's 75 degrees, that it feels nothing like the 75 degrees that they felt 20, 30 years ago. That now 75 degrees outside is stifling. And it's because the UV, the ultraviolet, it's just spiking through the roof, and the sun is changing, and NASA knows it. And when my book came out, the first one in 1999, the second one in 2004, I was actually called an alarmist by people in NASA that I was spreading doom. And that,
right. Well,
and now they're worried about it.
Exactly. And we're going to get to the pillar and the base, which has eight sides on. We're going to talk about all of this right after the break, because the images on the base are as alarming as it gets, but they are what they are. Our guest tonight is Jay Widener. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. This is a Good Friday edition of Coast to Coast AM. I'll be right back. I knew tonight was going to be one of those nights. It's nothing like Friday night open lines on Coast to Coast. Jay Widener, Folcanelli, the phones are lighting up, so let's go ahead and do this. We're going to take some calls, but also I want to remind everybody, you can check the latest trailer for George Norrie's internet TV show, Beyond Belief. Find your own truth by exploring perspectives you won't find in the mainstream on some of life's biggest mysteries, from specialists in metaphysics, ancient wisdom, and, of course, the paranormal. You can sign up for just 99 cents for the first month at beyondbelief.com, and you can enjoy hours of fascinating past shows. Just go to beyondbelief.com. Our guest tonight, Jay Widener. We're going to talk Jay into taking some phone calls on a Friday night on Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church, sitting in for George Norrie on this Good Friday. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Coast AM. Our guest tonight is Jay Widener, and it is a Falconelli quest. Now, we're talking about the Great Cross of Hende. And what we have done, we've started at the top of the cross, and there's the pillar. I want to get, Jay, because I want to get to some calls. The base of the cross is, to me, the most important. Also, it's the most visually stunning, too, as well. You have, I can let you go through it, but you have an eight-ray starburst. You've got a half-moon shape with an eye spot. You've got the angry sun face with the bulging spiral eye thing. You've got an oval that fills the entire space of the rectangle, which is quartered by a cross, all symbology with a direct message. Where do you want to start? You want to start with the face?
Yeah, let's start with the eight-pointed star, which is on the the east side of the cross, and we'll go around the cross.
Sounds good.
The eight-pointed star could be anything at this point. It's a sign of Venus, but it's also in a scenario that I'm entailing, it is about an exploded star or a sun. And or it could be an explosion from the center of the galaxy, if Paula Violette's theories are correct. If you move to the north side of the cross, you'll have the moon, fairy tale moon, which is actually looks more like a boat. And if you look closely, you can see that it looks like there's people in the boat. And the boat has a hawse hole. A hawse hole is a hole in the side of a boat where the chain or the rope for your anchor goes through. And the hawse hole looks like an eye. So it's a suggestion that the moon is some kind of boat, some kind of vehicle. And if you move to the south side or to the west side of the cross, we come to what is really the most important, or maybe not the most important, but one of the most interesting panels, which is the one you see when you cross by the cross of Hende in the town of Hende. You don't really see any other of the other panels very clearly, except for this one, which is, of course, of this angry sun surrounded by four odd-looking
stars
or something, and the sun is expanding outwards. You can see it's clearly the artist is trying to show you that the sun is expanding out and it's angry. And then on the south side of the cross of Hende is the odd quarter with the A's with the peculiar bent crossbar, which makes him look like the Masonic seal.
There's no mistaking that, by the way. Yeah. I mean, the first thing you see when you look at the cross, it looks like a Templar cross with four Masonic A symbols that's exactly what it looks like. Right. There's almost no mistaking it.
Falconelli says it was built by a master mason who had vast astronomical skills.
Right.
So he's not pulling any punches. He's telling you that this is a super monument built by somebody who really knows what they're doing.
Let me ask you really quick. Is it possible to misinterpret what we are looking at here? Because it's very obvious, even to the uninitiated. What you're looking at, is there a way to misinterpret this, or is this as direct as it can be?
I think it's as direct as it can be, and let's not forget that when Pizarro went to Peru, remember the cross at the top, it tells you to go to Cusco, Peru. When Pizarro went to Peru, he brought an artist in to document everything with him, and he wrote a book when he got back to Spain about what he'd seen in Peru, and one of the drawings in the book was The Great Secret of the Incas, and it had all four of those symbols that are on the cross of Hende in the drawing, except that the four A's were now caves, underground caves in the Andes Mountains. But the eight-pointed star, the fairy tale moon, the exploding sun, they're all there in a document from, 1550 in Cusco, Peru.
Let's get to some phone calls. It's Friday night, and we have had some of these calls now on hold for quite a long time. So let's go ahead and go to Max in Texas, east of the Rockies. Max, you're welcome to Coast to Coast. Say hi to Jay Widener. Max?
Hello?
Max, you're live.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes, we got you, man.
Okay, great, great, great. Great show, Jimmy. Jay, you're my hero. I know a lot about a lot of stuff. I actually came across that book back in like 2000, and I saw your show on the Hende Cross on the History Channel, and I've studied a lot about alchemy. Turns out I'm related to an alchemist named John II. Have you ever heard of him?
No, I haven't.
He was the Margrave of Brandenburg-Coldeback. He lived from 1406 to 1464. Huh. I read that Alchemist for Dummies. I don't know if you read that one. And the Alchemist book. And bookofaquarius.com. I'm really interested in your stuff. And that was about my only question. Well, I studied Paul LaViolette's theory, too. And there was one rumor that Tesla and Marconi were still alive, that were living in a volcano down there. And it makes you wonder about
that too,
cars
yeah.
and Marconi jets and stuff. But I just want to wish you all the best. And Coast to Coast, the greatest show there ever was. And Jimmy, you're excellent.
Thank you so much, Max. You have a good night. I've heard the same thing about Tesla and Marconi. Have you, let me ask you this, Jay. Have you ever done like a Freedom of Information Act request on Falconelli or Marconi or Tesla and trying to find a connection between these guys?
Dang, that is a seriously great suggestion. I should do a FOIA on Falconelli. I've never thought of that before. I will. I'm going to do that. And I'll find out what's there. I've never done it, but it's a great suggestion.
I'll send you a bill. Let's go to Greg in Portland on Wildcard. Greg, welcome to Coast AM. Say hi to Jay Widener.
Hi, Jay. I love your work, and I especially love your theory about replacing or restoring the pineal gland to the state of its youth being the key to aging. But I believe you're really close, but I'm actually writing a book called Parasympathesia, which actually, what you're doing is restoring your spiritual connection when you restore the use of your pineal gland. But that is related to restoring and accessing your parasympathetic nervous system. And through manipulation of the anesthetic and healing properties of the parasympathetic nervous system, you can reverse and or even halt aging. And I'm experimenting with that now.
I'd love to see your work. If you could possibly email me, if you just go to jaywidener.com, you can get my email. I'd love to see your work. It sounds incredibly interesting.
I'd be thrilled to do it, sir. And I think I want to say that I love everything that you've done from Kubrick to the Cross of Hende, and I look forward to corresponding with you.
Sounds great. I look forward to it, too.
Thank you so much for the phone call, Greg, and you have a great, safe rest of your night. Let's go to Mike, first-time caller line out in Maryland. Mike, welcome to Coast AM. Say hi to Jay Widener.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Hey, Jay, if I understand what you're saying here, the message of the cross is indicating that there's a coming catastrophe that's going to be related to the sun and space weather. And I was wondering if there's a time frame for that. And if it ties in any way with Major Ed Dames and his remote viewing, where he sees a coming catastrophe, which is going to be triggered by the sun. Is there any correlation there? Have you seen what Major Ed Dames, the information he's put out on this?
Absolutely. I've talked to him at great length about it. And it's directly related. And NASA knows it. The elites know it. And this is one of my major messages I want to get out there, and that is that is that the chemtrails that are going on, everybody thinks that this is the elite trying to kill us, but I actually believe the chemtrails are their feeble attempt to kind of put reflective material into the atmosphere to reflect back this incredibly fierce light that's coming from the sun right now. The sun is rapidly evolving and changing, and they know it, and they're worried. And I also believe, by the way, that GMOs are not actually an attempt to kill us either. I think GMOs are actually an attempt by these guys to develop seeds that will grow in this new environment that is unknown. And I don't know what's going to happen. Interestingly enough, we know that the pineal gland is activated by light, and the chemical makeup of the pineal gland, which is serotonin when you are bathed in light and melatonin when you're bathed in darkness, are the two major chemicals, and they govern your aging process. And so if the light of the sun is changing, then that means that the pineal gland is changing, which means that the seed of consciousness, which is what the pineal gland is also changing. And what that means, I don't know. I don't know what that means, but I know that it is scientifically a valid train of thought. And I don't know if this is the cause of the waking, the changing sun, but I think it is. I think the great awakening that's going on is somehow being caused by this change in the light that is happening.
Mike, thank you for the call, and have a great, safe rest of your weekend. We'll see you tomorrow night.
Thank you.
Jay, let me ask you this before we get back to the calls and the phones are jammed up. Is how did Falconelli cop this vision of the future that is represented on the Great Cross of Hende? Was there time travel? Was there a vision? Did he get a message from somebody? How did he acquire the information that is represented?
That's a good question, and I don't know. My practical side says that there's a secret society, Freemasons or something, that successfully has handed down from father to son the information of the last catastrophe, and that this is a periodic thing that happens, warning of the future. And some kind of shamanic thing where they looked into the future. It does seem kind of wild that, you know, somebody could be able to predict something so accurately. I want to emphasize that since the Cross of Hende chapter came out and was translated into English in the late 50s, that's just about the time that they started digging, deep underground military bases all around the U.S. And if you wanted to get away from a gigantic solar flare, the best place to do it would be to go underground. So, and what I'm trying to say is that possibly the grand unified theory of conspiracy is that the elites know that there's this periodic explosion from the sun, and they're doing their dang best to get safe and leave the rest of us dangling.
Let's go to Springfield Wildcard. John, say hi to Jay Widener. Welcome to Coast to Coast AM.
Hello, sir. I have a kind of a three-part question here. My first thing is I've actually seen another extremely similar cross to the Cross of Hayden underwater. I'm an amateur scuba diver. I scuba dive a lot on the coast of Florida, and there was a storm that just passed through, and something like that kind of just appeared whenever me and my dad were at about 30 feet off the coast of Key West.
Well, John, we're going to be hitting a break here. Can you get to your question really quick? I don't want to have to cut you off.
Yeah, my question is this. What is your – I've been doing a lot of research on Der Glocke or the Nazi Bell. The name Falconelli has actually came up in my research. Is there any evidence to suggest that that was an alchemist project or anything like that?
Oh, that's absolutely. That's a great question, John. Thank you so much.
That is a great question. I'm actually just finished a documentary called Deep Space about the Nazi Bell, and yes, that they were definitely they discovered that counter-rotating liquid mercury and zapping it with tons of electricity would cause a propulsion and a torsion field, which is the key to understanding not only how to live a long time, but all sorts of alchemical processes. And yes, I think the Germans are way, way, way ahead of everybody in their research and technologies, and that, yes, they discovered it, and they may even have had help, who knows, from some of these guys.
You know what's funny? When people think about alchemy, and of course, I'm a victim of this too. We think about the Philosopher's Stone and turning lead into gold and the transmutation stuff, and that's what we think of first. But that isn't the most important part of alchemy, is it?
No, actually, the most important part of alchemy is the spiritual part, which is, you know, the fact that you are taking the lead of your body and turning it into the golden light of the soul. And that's really the whole point of the human endeavor, is to realize the soul. And I think that we don't give, you know, in this day and age, in this material age, we don't really think or give credence to this idea, but that's really the whole point of existence, is to get in touch with your eternal self. And that's really the point of alchemy, is to give you as a human being enough time here on earth to accomplish that. And that's very difficult to accomplish in the 70 plus years that we are given. And alchemists, you know, seek long life, not because they're greedy and want to live a long time, but because they're trying to achieve a spiritual practice, which takes a long time.
Have you ever been threatened, Jay? Like this show right now, we're talking about stuff that is right on the edge of scary. Have you ever been threatened and told to, you know, stop speaking about this so directly?
No, in fact, the exact opposite has happened. I have been followed, I admit, and I've seen people following me, and I've actually chased after a guy who was following me, and I almost caught him, too. He would have been a dead man if I'd caught him. But in fact, I've been actually told by people high up in agencies, excuse me, that they actually like what I'm saying and they want this stuff out, and that, you know, they're watching my back. And so I think that there's a certain group of people that want this stuff to come out, and they're encouraging the courageous to come forth. And I do feel a little bit threatened, and I do feel that I have to be careful. But at the same time, this is it. I mean, if we don't get this out now, I think that the clampdown could come at any time, and then there won't be any more times for Jimmy Church and Jay Widener to talk. And so I feel that this is it.
You know, right.
Get it out.
This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church, sitting in for George Norrie tonight on this Good Friday. Our guest is Jay Widener. More with Jay right after this short break. We'll be taking your calls next.